The LaPata family lived in Smithfield, 12 miles north of Boston. Susan had once lived there a long time ago when she was a guidance counselor at the junior high school, before Harvard and all that followed, so I knew my way around better than I sometimes did in the suburbs, or wanted to. As I drove through town, I was reminded once again of why Susan left. If you Googled bedroom community, there'd be a link to Smithfield. It was a Saturday morning in spring, and nothing was happening. There were no kids in the schoolyard throwing the ball around. There was no one shopping, maybe because there was no place to shop. No dogs were racing about. No frisbees were being thrown. No bicycles were being pedaled. The town common, which was the only evidence of New England in Smithfield, was deserted. There weren't even any kids sitting on the wall across from the meeting house smoking weed. The LaPata home was a big, style-free house in a pretentious development called Royal Acres, where there was one house to an acre, and I suspected no one knew anyone else. I parked on the empty street and walked up the curving brick walk to the front door. There was too little landscaping and too much house, and the recently wintered lawn stretched emptily to the next house, and the next, and the next. Big, ugly house on the prairie. I rang the bell. The woman who answered was wearing cropped pants and a tight top with longish sleeves pushed up on her forearms. She had a very big engagement ring, a smoker's thin face, and the blondest hair I had ever seen. "Mrs. LaPata?" I said.
"Yeah," she said. "You the guy that called?"
"Spencer," I said. I gave her my card. "I'm an investigator for Cone, Oaks, and Baldwin."
"You're on their side," she said.
"Probably too early," I said, "for us and them. Mostly, I'm just trying to establish what happened."
"We already got that established," she said. "The fat pervert killed my daughter."
I nodded. "May I come in?" I said. She shrugged.
"May as well," she said. "Better to our face than snooping around behind our back."
I smiled. These were, after all, bereaved parents. "I may do some of that, too," I said. She nodded absently and led me into the living room and sat me in a brand new flowered armchair. The room was as intimate as an operating room, but not as welcoming. She went to the living room door and yelled up the front stairs.
"Tommy, there's some kind of cop here."
"Okay." I waited. She waited. And down the stairs he came. Pink Lacoste shirt, tan Dockers, dark brown Sperry topsiders.
"Spencer," he said. "Right?"
I stood. "Right," I said.
"Memory's still hitting on all eight," he said. "Tommy LaPata."
We shook hands and sat down.
"I'm in insurance," he said. "My business to remember names."
"Own business?" I said. "Or you work for somebody?"
"Independent broker," he said. "LaPata Insurance in Malden Square."
He took a business card from a cut glass holder on a coffee table in front of the couch and handed it to me.
"Take care of any insurance needs you got," he said. "Casualty, health, life, annuities, anything you need."
I took the card and tucked it into my shirt pocket. "Thanks," I said.
"Buffy," he said. "How about making us some coffee?" "Not if you're going to drink it in here," Mrs. LaPata said. "I'm not having coffee stains on my good furniture."
"Jesus Christ, Buff," LaPata said.
"You know my rules," she said.
"I'm already over-coffeed," I said. "Thanks anyway." She paid no attention to me while she lit a cigarette and inhaled deeply before she let the smoke ease out, as if she regretted letting it go.
"We are going to take that fat pervert for every penny he has in the world," she said.
I nodded. "Did Dawn have any previous relationship with Mr. Nelson," I said, "before the night she died?"
"Are you kidding?" Mrs. LaPata said. "You think I'd permit my daughter to go out with a sick tub of lard like him?"
"None that we knew of," Mr. LaPata said. "But she went with him willingly enough that night," I said.
"Well," Mr. LaPata said, "you know, young girls and a big movie star." "Besides which," Mrs. LaPata said, "she was some kind of sexual neurotic anyway. I mean, the men she chased."
She have a boyfriend? I said. Mrs. Lapata sucked in a big lungful of smoke.
Lots of them, Mr. Lapata said.
Mrs. Lapata made a derisive sound as she exhaled.
That's for sure, she said.
Grief took some funny disguises. I'd talked with too many people struggling with grief to generalize about how they were supposed to do it. But the Lapatas were dealing with it more oddly than many. He was of the upbeat memory. She was a swell kid. His wife was angry. She was a slut. Maybe they were both right. The two weren't, after all, mutually exclusive. But I was quite certain I wasn't going to penetrate either disguise today, and maybe never if I only spoke to them together. There was a photograph on a shiny walnut credenza in front of the picture window. A young man and a young woman in their teens. That Dawn, I said.
Yes, Lapata said.
Who's the boy?
Her brother, Mr. Lapata said. Matthew.
Where is he? I said.
Harvard,
they said simultaneously, as if they were announcing that he was King of England. Sometimes the temptation to amuse myself is irresistible. I nodded approvingly.
Good school, I said.